So I'm now moving to item 6, which is the urgent and emergency care blueprint. We're going to receive and discuss the blueprint as provided by the RHCCG. Who's speaking to this paper?
I'll try to start.
Okay, Martin, over to you. Paper C, members, for your...
Okay, so I'd like to draw everybody's attention to page C7, which tries to describe how patients access emergency and urgent care at this moment. So they can access that via the ambulance service, via 111, out of hours, GP access, hospital, a variety of different services outside the hospital. And that just look at that and you can see that it is, whilst it's coordinated, it isn't necessarily easy for people to to navigate. And so what's been happening over the course of the past 6 months and beyond is that work has been undertaken across the system to try to create something that starts to bring together all those services in a more cohesive fashion. So I know that Dr. Cabrini Salter and others have been working with the hospital and GP colleagues and other representatives of the health and social care system, but also speaking to patients and others about what could we be doing to actually improve how we deliver urgent and emergency care. And so the proposal really is encapsulated on page 15. Well, what we're looking to do is to locate an urgent and emergency care floor on the hospital site. It allows us to better coordinate activities so that we have primary care services, we have 111 and out-of-hours services, we support patients who attend the A&E departments that may require just primary care type services more effectively than we do at the moment. I attended a very helpful presentation last week where it became apparent that approximately 50 to 70 patients per day, or half of the patients who attend the A&E departments at the hospital, have lower level medical concerns. It doesn't require the full A&E service. So what we're finding is that patients are spending a lot of time in the department because they're being triaged, and then clearly and quite appropriately, those with the most severe needs are being seen to in a more timely fashion. But what that does mean is that some patients are spending more time waiting for care, and that's an anxious time for them. So how can we actually make it better so that we better deploy the resources that we have? So it's a shame that Cabrini is not able to be with us, but she has a clinical job and she's quite busy at the moment. But what she's been doing is looking at how can we create a common front door service at the hospital where patients don't have to make a decision as to which door they go through. But once they're in the department, then they're triaged, as they are at the moment. Those that require urgent medical care or higher level medical care go into the A&E department as a basis at the moment, supported by consultants and paediatricians and others. And those that require a lower level of care can access a primary care driven service, 7-7, with extended hours that allows for them to have access to diagnostics, pharmacy services, and also allow for them to have their out-of-hospital care coordinated. It's a single point of reference rather than having to go back to see their GP and having those activities scheduled for them subsequently. So the paper, I hope, is self-explanatory, but just again, if I can draw your attention to Catherine Calloway's book, page 24, what does the island spend on urgent care at the moment? There's quite a lot of money that's spent here. It's around about £13 million. And so can that money be better spent through better coordination and working with the mainland and working with others to ensure, as per the question earlier on, that emergency medical services are maintained and enhanced by bringing together all the agencies that we have. So that work is ongoing. I'm hoping that we'll be able to progress this over the winter period. The hospital are driving this internally because it also helps the hospital with many of the concerns and the issues that they're contending with. And as we progress, the executive, that includes the chief executive of the council, the chief executive of the hospital and myself, are meeting twice a week to better coordinate emergency care activity so that we try to bring this to a more expedient conclusion so that we can benefit patients on the island. So that means that we're working with Carol and the others to make sure that we've got the capacity to do this whilst at the same time delivering on the day job. I don't know whether there's any further questions about the paper, but I have asked my colleague to attend because she's more involved in the detail than I am, because I've come to this rather late, but I do think that this is the way forward. There are models elsewhere across England where there are already urgent care units in hospitals that have combined all of these different service elements together.
Darren, I was referring to you as Maggie's substitute name, and I couldn't think of your name, so I apologise. But do you want to? I can see you reaching to add to that, and yes. Perhaps just explain what your role is in relation to us.
Certainly. So apologies for Maggie Holden today. She's away on holiday, and I'm Darren Cassell, I'm Deputy CEO, and also the Finance Director of the Trust. So clearly, we've got a huge interest in this, and as Martin said, we fully support this direction of travel. We have something I'd probably call a traditional emergency service. But the key thing here is integrating an urgent and an emergency care service at the hospital site, as Martin's described. So we fully support this. The sooner we can get this in place across a wider range of initiatives, the better for our patients.
I'm going to ask a naive question because you can tell I'm not a medical guru. The same number of people are going to turn up, aren't they? Because they're just going to go like they do now.
Probably more.
Probably more. So how does this become a more slick system then?
So there's 3,000 GP appointments a day on the island, of which, I don't know, I'm not sure Dr. Leck can confirm, but probably 20-30% of those are urgent appointments. More. Okay, there's more. So having spoken to our GPs about how they can better deliver primary care services, they absolutely recognise that if they're able to work in a slightly different way around their emergency appointments, and this is a part of that solution, then that will free up more time for them to be able to look after the frail elderly, patients with chronic conditions in their practices. So this is part of a bigger piece of work that we're looking at the moment, in terms of how do we free up capacity in primary care for them to do more of the coordinated activities with social services and others, looking after the patients with mental health who will take more than a 14-minute appointment time, by trying to consolidate more of the urgent and emergency care into, whilst this is the main hub for the island, we haven't ruled out having a number of sub-hubs to this by using technology for teleconsultation and other support services. Because what we hope is that those patients that require an urgent appointment will be able to access either the Newport service or one of the hub services. Don't ask me where they're going to be yet, so I haven't had those conversations about accessing and having diagnostics and having all that kind of care coordinated. So the volume of patients that would go to this service would be tens of thousands, we anticipate. So that allows us to model through what level of capacity we would need on this and the hubs by freeing up some of the capacity in primary care.
Okay, so it sounds quite positive. It's obviously, I suspect, a lot of work. And I'm just thinking broad timescale, because I suspect down the line, not immediately, the Health Advocate Scrutiny Committee would probably want to have a look at how that was going, but not to interfere in the development of it, obviously looking at it probably further down the line. So is there any approximate sort of time frame?
So I think that the blueprint is here. As we start to get into the detail and start to work out what does that mean in terms of capital expenditure, what does it mean in terms of changing people's job plans, what does it mean in terms of how do we recruit to these posts, I'm hoping that that will start to take place more effectively in the new year. And yes, this is not an initiative that's just going to be done to. It has to involve a whole variety of partners. Yeah. So we'll be working with the GP Federation, with the Trust, with Adler Social Services and everybody else, bringing that proposal to Opium scrutiny for their input, and also working with the voluntary sector and others, because, again, if we have a hub, it's better for us to be able to coordinate our engagement with the voluntary sector as well, by allowing for patients who have been identified with specific conditions to be redirected into voluntary services from a single point of reference.
I see Rachel nodding in approval. So do you have any comments you want to make, and probably briefly introduce yourself, please?
Oh, yes, sorry, I'm Rachel McKenna, so I'm representing the voluntary sector forum. I'm not very well prepared because Claire Steele is an unusual representative, so I
Okay, so the discussion points, so what, Carol?
So this is a really important development, and certainly from the perspective where I sit in the system, really, really welcome it. Just in terms of C15 and also the funding C24 pages that I wanted to draw attention to. Most certainly, voluntary sector, not all of this will mean necessarily additional resource. So, for instance, we already have a hospital, AGK run, the home hospital service, which I think on occasion is not used in the best way in which it could be. So, I think some resources are already there. And most certainly, in terms of having social care provision at that front door, that's just going to be such an important element of this as well, in order to avoid, as necessary, unnecessary admissions in the hospital. So this is really key. I think the thing I'd like to say is we need to learn lessons from the previous walking centre.
Yes.
We actually had something which, quite frankly, if you remember the public, could sound, this is all very similar, but it's closed hardship. So we do need to ensure that we learn those lessons in terms of implementation this time around to ensure that it's used in the right way.
Good. Okay, so I'm thinking if we gave it a 6-month update target, and then depending on how it's going, it just gives us. Yeah, you're being bold, 3 months, okay?
Yeah,
if you want that, I was trying to give you a bit more time. Too soft, aren't I? But yeah, do a progress report. Will that be at our next meeting then?
Yes.
Are you happy to do that?
Yes.
And then, if there is any sort of scrutiny ongoing to be required, we can start planning that.
Thank you, Chair. Is it possible to include in your update how exactly you're addressing challenges which are highlighted on page C25? There is a list of challenges, and the document itself doesn't say anything about how exactly you're going about them. There are steps which are identified, but again, there's no detail, time scales. So if you can, please include some detail in updates.
Yeah, mitigate it, how you mitigate it, and thinking that sort of thing.
Yep, well then.
Okay. So, Martin, thank you very much for that. Well, I think we're just being asked to note the progress, and we'll pick an update again after Christmas. Is that okay? Okay, thank you very much for that. Moving on to item 7, which is the suicide prevention.